at the moment is Dylan Voller's still in adult prison, and the other juveniles are, you know, some are still there, some are out in their communities. So what they've got now is a lot of them have legal representation now to take civil action. They've now got access to the footage and stuff like that, because they're put into a really horrific sort of situation. At the time it happened of the tear gassing, the attorney came out and said that, you know, there was a big riot and there were 7 youths involved. Now, when you actually look at the footage, there's only 1 youth, and it wasn't a big riot. He didn't break out of his cell. The prison guard accidentally left the door unlocked, and he'd been locked in there for 3 weeks. There's no air conditioning, no airflow, no light, and it is so hot in Darwin. You feel like you're suffocating. So anyone who would have came out of that room would have behaved in the same manner as him. At the end of the day, it breaks your heart when you watch that footage, because you're looking at all these boys locked in their cell who have got nothing to do with the situation, being gassed, dragged outside, tied up, you know, having just about being, you know, drowned in water. And who takes responsibility for that? And that's where, you know, the boys now will be taking legal action against them.
But those reports around the tear gassing, I mean, there was even an article at the time in the Courier Mail, so became public, and the way that it was dismissed by the state government isn't an isolated incident. These aren't isolated incidences. There's a lot more going on around Australia where more people would now step up and say, OK, well, this is what's been going on. The way that it was handled by the state government when they then had their own private inquiry, can you talk about what happened then?
Yeah, so look, there had been a number of incidents leading up to the tear gassing. There'd been a number of reports, and even after the tear gassing, there was a number of incidents. Now, what had happened was the Dondale facility, the original one, it was not set up for a youth precinct at all. And now where they've been situated is even in a worse situation. So they had Michael Vito come up and did an investigation and a report on the previous Dondale facility and made recommendations of moving forward. Then the Children's Commissioner also stepped in and done their own investigation as well, and done a number of recommendations. Now, both those reports were presented to the NT government. So, you know, when you have an Attorney General and Chief Minister saying, oh, we weren't aware, you know, we didn't see that footage, I'm sorry, but that's incorrect, because in those reports is word for word what is on that footage. Because I read those reports. You hear those prisons guards say, just gas them, use as much chemicals, you know, pulverise them. That's in the report. And they also had access to the footage. We've known about this for years because, you know, we made sure that reports went there. We got out there in the media, you know, the media was following it, and nothing has happened, you know. It's so disturbing. And so now you've got a government that wants to act. The NT government wants to act now because it's gone public and people right across Australia have seen it. No, I'm sorry, but you knew about this years ago. You should have acted then.
So when we're looking at violation towards the boys, even just the whole stripping of the boys with the level of force, I mean, that can be seen as a sexual assault. There hasn't been any discussion around sexual assault, but even the whole stripping procedure and that level of vulnerability and safety, that is a form of sexual assault.
Oh, my God. When you watch that footage, it makes you so ill. It makes you really ill to watch it. Now, in the Northern Territory, we have mandatory reporting. So anyone in the street, if you see somebody verbally or physically abuse a child or a youth, that could be just yelling at them, you have to, by law, report it to the police. Now, when I looked at that footage, I'm sitting there going, well, hang on, why weren't they ever reported? Why weren't they ever charged? I mean, it's not acceptable to throw a young boy onto a mattress with 3 blokes near, you know, one guy's near him in the back, you know, the other one grabbed him by the throat. You're like, are you serious?
And immediately and the first thing they do is take their pants off. I mean,
oh, God, that made you ill. And you look at it and you go, hang on, you just cut his shorts off and thrown him in the corner naked, and then you throw him a shirt. I'm sorry? What did I miss there?
Yeah. These kids are Aboriginal kids, you know, from the communities up there. So by looking at it, when it comes to the issues around self-harm and suicidality, I mean, this is what, say, Dylan, I'll use Dylan as an example, he was expressing that he was going to hurt himself on numerous occasions, and he was clearly distressed. The procedure around that, I mean, that needs to be looked at because obviously there's no cultural accountability for the children. They're not bringing elders in to address the issues around self-harm and suicidality and cultural support. There is none of that consultation with the community. Basically, the parents have really got no idea, or their extended family, of the punishment that their children are receiving.
No. And when you look at it, 70% of the youth that are in there are on remand, so they shouldn't be in there at all because they haven't actually been sentenced to a term. Of the remaining 30%, there's only a small percentage that are high-end offenders. So a majority of the youth that are in there shouldn't be in there at all. And so the way we see it is, okay, on the outside of a juvenile detention centre, when a youth is threatening suicide or has mental health issues, they are specialists who know how to deal with it. They're able to talk to them. They're able to put a plan in place. They can work with them. But within Don Dale, their way of treating it is, okay, he just said he's going to kill himself. Let's just tie him to a chair and put a spit mask over him. That's not going to solve the situation. And so, you know, you're kind of like going, why aren't you using specialists? You know, if you're aware that a number of youth within the juvenile detention centre are suicidal or have mental health, why aren't you bringing in health professionals to work with them? You can't have a prison guard who has no experience in that and just say, we're just going to tie him to a chair and, you know, put that mask on him. I'm like, God, all they're kind of like doing is escalating the problem. And they're really not helping the youth at all. All they're doing is just making the situation worse. And they're the ones who are responsible for the youth, you know, rebelling against the system.
You're listening to SBS Radio Living Black. I'm Kirsten Lindsay, and I'm speaking with the CEO of the North Australian Aboriginal Justice Association, Priscilla Collins. Dr. Howard Barth filed a report in 2012 about the mistreatment of Dylan Voller and the issues around the re-abuse towards him that wasn't discussed on television, and nothing was done about this. So obviously this isn't an isolated case as well with Dylan's case, that there would be a lot more boys and girls who would have gone through similar issues.
Yeah, this has been an ongoing thing. The legal system, look, you've got to give credit to Howard Barth. He's done so much work into this, as well as our current Children's Commissioner. But, you know, when you're presenting these reports, and you've got a government who doesn't want to acknowledge them and, you know, implement the recommendations, you're banging your head against a brick wall. You know, it got to the stage that I was speaking to Minister Scullion, the Minister for Indigenous Affairs, and he actually came to us and said, what can I do? What can I do to make changes, put pressure on the Northern Territory? Because he was frustrated as well.
When was that?
That's been going for a while now, so we've been working closely with him. And I understand people, you know, have their own views about the minister, but from where we come in the legal sector, we can't say anything negative about him because he's always supported us. He's keen to work with the sector to also put pressure on the government to make these changes.
But his comments yesterday were that he was not aware that this had happened and it was not within his interest.
In relation to the juvenile detention centre, he probably wasn't aware of that part because when those reports were done, they were actually presented to the Northern Territory Government. I'm not aware that they were presented to Minister Scullion. So what we had been speaking to Minister Scullion about was justice issues right across the board. And he was keen to kind of like work with us to, you know, start putting pressure on the government. I'm not aware that he was actually aware of the incidents at Don Dale and these reports that were given to the NT government.
I mean, something like that, people do talk. It'd be pretty hard for it not to be discussed when there's that level of violence that has occurred. When we talk about the level of violence, because obviously the human rights lawyer Ruth Barson commented around the breaches of international law, including the International Covenant on the Rights of the Child and the Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment. Can you sort of give me your view around why international law on human rights isn't protecting these children?
Look, at the end of the day, the NT government doesn't even acknowledge it. That's the way we see it, because you've got that there. When you've got a government that introduces legislation only recently to use restraining devices on youth, they just don't take any notice of it.
We're looking at alternative justice futures. I mean, the Change the Record Coalition, I know that NAJA isn't involved in program around options or diversionary options. Can you talk about what you'd like to see come out of the Royal Commission in relation to justice reinvestment and diversionary for children to obviously not re-enter the criminal justice system, but also to keep kids out of the criminal justice system?
We're really calling on justice reinvestment. So rather than pour all of our money into the prison system, you divert that money away to early intervention, diversion, rehabilitation. So that's where we should be focusing a lot of priority services to dealing with it before people come to the justice system. Then when people actually do come to the justice system, you know, we should have a specialised youth precinct so that you have your wraparound services. So any youth that enter it, you know, you're able to case manage, because when our mob come in, they don't come in with an issue. They come in with a cluster of issues. So we need wraparound services to deal with it so that we can make that person a better person with a better future and to deal with everything that they're dealing with as well. Because no one looks at the trauma that they've gone through, you know, the mental health issues, their education, and that's what you need. You need those wraparound services. So if we can break that cycle, we can make the community safer and we can reduce people's contact with the system, and it'll just make such a big difference. But trying to get the government to change their way of thinking to this way of thinking is really, really hard, because they just don't get it. Everyone's tough on crime, tough on crime, tough on crime. I'm sorry, that is not working. You know, we need to focus on providing more therapeutic programs and more diversionary programs, rehabilitation programs, and case managing, not only youth, but adult prisoners as well. And then you will see a huge difference.
Okay, so when you talk about that, because in the Four Corners report, Magistrate Oliver mentioned that she knows that by sending the kids into juvenile detention, that it isn't going to actually fix the problem. It's basically sending broken children into a broken system.
Yeah, and unfortunately she's right. And unfortunately her hands are tied, because where else can she send them? She can't put them on bail because they don't have accommodation. You know, and that's what makes it really difficult for our magistrates, is they understand what's required, but the programs and the resources are not there. So, you know, where can you send them for diversion? Where can you send them for rehabilitation? You know, where can you send them for bail accommodation? It's not there. And so at the end of the day, that's all they can do, is send them to Dondale. That's why you got 70% in Dondale are on remand. They haven't actually been sentenced to a term.
We saw Dylan's letter of thanks.
Yeah, that'll make a huge thing for him, because, you know, at the end of the day, who helps him, eh? Like, who's there for him? And for him to realise that people actually understand what's happened to him, it'll make a huge thing for him.